Okay, let's get started. We need to have our first lecture right off the bat because Doug has to leave soon, so I want to get him up first and get him out of here. First lecture is Doug Schwand, Design Challenges in Assistive Technology. Doug began his career in rehab engineering here at Stanford in ME 210, which is now ME 310, and he designed with his team the hand bike, which he'll show today. It's the first arm-powered two-wheeled bicycle for individuals with lower limb disabilities. And after he graduated, he continued development of the hand bike, working on several other models. He iterated his design at the Rehab R&D Center with me. And there he worked on not only that project, but several other assistive technology projects, including fingerspelling hands, hypergravity devices, which we'll talk about, and specialty cycle ergometers. Over the years, Doug has also consulted on exciting and challenging projects outside of the VA, which he'll talk about, including exercise concepts for long-term space travel, MRI-compatible fixtures and mobility devices, and robots for physical therapy. He's no longer a VA employee, but Doug continues to work with universities and companies as a freelance consulting design engineer and part-time as a springboard diving coach. That's where he's going after this. So, his recent consulting projects include participating in the design of the prosthetic haptic interface for the DARPA bionic arm and contributing to the development of a new model of the G-Trainer by Alter G. So let's welcome Doug.
Good afternoon. Dave has asked me to come in before to this class, and what I like to do is show you a little bit of what I like to do, which is design mechanical mechanisms, products for disabled, products for people who have special needs, whether they're able-bodied in a disabling environment like space, or just perhaps even in an MRI, that's another place where you might feel able-bodied or be able-bodied still be in a confined area and have limited mobility. So let's see. So I'd like to just show you a checklist that I have been using since I was a student here decades ago, some 30 years now, I think, that I use over and over again and share it with you because it helps me remember the process that I'm trying to follow when I'm designing, and in a few of these projects that Dave mentioned in the introduction. So, has anybody seen a list like this for how you might attack a design project? Dave has, of course. And you. This is one, I forget which professor showed us this, but I've elaborated on it over the years. Basically, you do need a need, and some of us are creative about having an idea, and then we make a need fit it. That's not what anybody likes to hear, but it's kind of fun that way. If you have a creative idea and you have a way to help people with it, go for it. And then what you're likely to do, what I'm tend to do, is get right into it and start designing and lose track of the fact that it may easily have been done before. So I try to remind myself to go online, look around, see what's already exists before I reinvent the wheel. And the process then steps through. I don't need to go through every phase of this, but you can see that you just go through the steps. It gets more and more detailed. You have to check what you're doing is correct, the analysis, make things, get right to prototyping if you can. And this I consider iterative. So I might step through this list fairly quickly and try things and make a little prototype and see how it works. Go back all the way back to a new concept. Let's see. So I thought I'd just get right into the different projects. I've actually felt very lucky to be on some very interesting projects. Are students in here already in design classes or intend to be? This is a design class of sorts too, right, Dave? Yes. When I was a student in ME210, which is 310 now, I arrived and the professor puts up all of the different projects, or distributes it, puts them on the board, and the hand bike was one of the projects that had been brought to us by Peter Axelson, who I think you'll meet later. He's coming in to talk at a later class. He came to our class from the BA and said, could someone help us design an arm-powered bicycle? And so I felt if I didn't get that project, none of the other projects that interesting to me. I'm sure they were, but I was so set on this and lucky to get onto it. So this is a two-wheeled, arm-powered cycle for people who are partially paralyzed, paraplegic, lower limb amputees, cerebral palsy, some of the different disabilities where they might be inclined to ride it. It has side wheels, which can be lifted up so that you're riding on two wheels. And that was the challenging part, the most exciting part of the project that I felt. So the hand bike has gone through several iterations of commercialization. And last I heard is being made by a company called Mobility Engineering. It's the last on the list here. Let me skip through these so that I just give you an introduction of the various projects. And if you have if you're interested in any of these projects, please feel free to contact me. I have one of the hand bikes, which you're welcome to try riding sometime. It's just that I have to rush out today. Here's some of the earlier phases. There's from, let's see if I can do this. There's a foam core model. Here's an actual riding model that my older brother and I put together over a weekend. We cut up old bikes until we could ride them. This is Peter Axelson, who you're going to get to meet at a later session, who is also paraplegic and has come up with all kinds of very cool things for people with disabilities, especially for recreation. We raced the bike in the Human Powered Speed Championships, set a world record speed of 25 miles an hour or something like that at the time. Worked with people in Canada, including this gentleman, Rick Hansen, who pushed his wheelchair around the world and went to multiple countries for the International Year of the Disabled Person at the time. And then we got different prototypes out. And we thought, well, it'd be kind of fun to ride together, tandem, have a able-bodied and people with disabilities ride together. So we first came up with a tandem that had essentially the hand bike in the front and then an upright position for the back with a steering linkage. In this case, both riders could steer, which is challenging. So biking around on this, we thought, oh, well, it'd be kind of fun to have a bike where you have a recumbent front that has both arm and foot power so that the rider, at least the rider in the front, could have a disability or not. And it would also maybe help the person who might have a disability not feel like they're on some special bike, although it's kind of hard to imagine this is not a special bike of sorts. The woman in the front here has a disability. She hadn't been on a bike in 10 or 12 years because of multiple sclerosis. She used the arm cranks to help her feet move through the cycle phases. Does anybody have any questions about this?
Where was that picture taken?
This photo was taken along the canal in Ottawa. We were at a conference there. Were you right there by the...
Forgot.
You're right there, yeah. Yeah, the local newspaper, the Citizen in Ottawa, the photographer, the sun had just come out, it had been raining really hard, someone had this umbrella, and so this is one of my favorite pictures, just because of we had a really good photographer taking it. Okay, and you had a question, sorry. That's a very good question. Both this and the hand bike, that could happen. Initially, we had the hand bike set up so that you would ride like this, and we were concerned that you could just hit the chain ring. So on the face of this of the chain ring, we have about a 1-inch thick foam pad, and we really haven't had a problem with it. People who have limited trunk stability could be strapped in, although that brings up other issues. If you fall over, you don't necessarily want to be in, have a seat belt on a bike. Scoot on to the next project. Oh, yes.
So the bottom one, it looks like there potentially could be just a mass market for something like that. Right?
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people want to do aquatic stuff as well.
Yes. I think it should. It could still do this. There's a. We were just. Oops. Go backward. We were. See if I can figure out how to use this. We were just finishing this at a frame builders in Oregon, and we heard about someone else doing almost the same thing. This counterpoint up in the Seattle area. There's a designer up there who had a recumbent arm, and he had an arm-powered attachment, and he had foot power, but had never done arm and foot power. For a year or two, we both thought that we had seen each other's designs. And then once I realized he was already out there, he had a patent too, and even though there might have been some earlier drawings, whatever, didn't matter. Like, good luck with it. Eventually, he went out of business, and then someone else has picked it. I think you can buy these now. This, I haven't checked just recently, but in Pennsylvania, there's someone making this. And I was just over at the pool the other day, and someone biked by with essentially the same frame, and instead of a seat for an adult or a child to ride on, well, it had a child carrier. It was a child seat, fully enclosed. And so I think it's coming back. Yeah, this is a lot of fun, and I think it's still, this bike still maybe sits over at the VA. I'd like to, it's government property. I can't get a hold of it. Let me skip ahead here because let's see here. So in the late 80s, there was a medical student that was doing a fellowship, a funded project over at NASA to develop exercise equipment, and he came to us for some help in developing different ways to exercise for long-term space travel. And this project shows one of the devices, which is, we call it interlimb resistance. You work one part of your body against the other. So if you were to clasp your hands against each other, you can generate any amount of force that you want. If you don't move you can move to one position and hold. That's isometric. All the muscles are contracting isometrically. You can have isokinetic, where it's constant movement, isotonic, which is constant force. You can do any kind of exercise working one part of your body against the other. And that's what this... I keep jumping ahead here. Sorry about that. In this case... The one leg is being worked against the other through a rope and pulley. Jim Anderson, who I'll mention again, is the machinist that Dave and I and Maury worked with for years at the VA, is holding these foot plates that have little pulleys for the ropes, and you can adjust where the rope centers are. Scott, who's pictured here, could push out with his right leg, and it would force his left leg to come in. And he's an astronaut who took this into space. That's why we got the little shuttle image here. He took it into space, and he was able to develop 1,200-pound leg press floating freely in the space shuttle. And I include this as just because I'd like to encourage anybody that's interested in design after they finish up here or they're already doing it to look for projects that are a lot of fun. This was a very fun project for me. And if you just keep your eyes open, follow any leads that you have for projects that really motivate you. You know, if you have someone with a disability, if you have a disability yourself, it's a great motivator. So let's see. I think I'm going to run out of time. I take too long on some of these projects. But this was a very expensive robot that can support someone with mobility or with neuromuscular disabilities, balance, Parkinson's, incomplete paraplegia or quadriplegia. It supports, it holds on to your waist while you're walking, and it also has a torso controller that you can reorient someone's torso, or you can give it a little push to, for instance, to help someone with Parkinson's to get started, to get moving. It can catch you if you start to fall. It weighs something like 500 or 600 pounds, and as you move around, the sensors can feel you move, and you feel less than a pound of force moving this, and this big thing follows you like a big dinosaur tail. Let's see if I have... Oh, sorry. I thought I had another photo of that. Does anybody have questions about this? Okay. Somewhat too far. As Dave mentioned in the introduction, another project that has been fun to work on is this state-of-the-art prosthetic limb for people who've had an arm amputation. It's a DARPA project, Defense Department's research arm, administered through Applied Physics Lab. And I've had just small parts of this, designing the fingertips, the palm, different parts of the hand. But the idea of this is that it's connected to your nerves in the sense that if you've had an amputation, the nerves get surgically moved into larger muscles like the pectoral muscles and the deltoids. They re-innervate into those muscles and amplify the signals so you can both control the arm and you can sense what is happening with the arm. So the fingertips have all kinds of sensors in them. The sensors drive little tactors, little things that tap on the surface of the skin where those finger, where your fingertip nerves have been re-innervated to. So this is like one extreme to help people who've had an amputation, and you'll soon be hearing from Maury, which is the other extreme. This is still not available, and it costs hundreds and thousands of dollars. But it's pushing the state of the art of the motors and the sensing and all this. And I won't say too much about Maury's. You'll see Maury's hand soon. I brought one of the magazines, which I can leave here, and you can look at it, take it if you'd like, pass it around. Oh, that's right. Yeah, thanks. Dave, I think, let's see. I'll just... show a trailer of this, and then maybe we'll turn on the videos. This was another project that we worked on at the VA and at NASA. The idea of this is that if you could walk on a treadmill with partial body support, that if you've had a stroke or joint surgery in your hips and or your knee, Parkinson's, that you could walk at partial body weight. So you take a step, instead of feeling your full body weight or more because of the decelerations of your, when you're walking, you get a higher load than your body weight, you could walk at a tenth of your body weight and be almost completely levitated. Have people seen this before? Oh, is there? Oh, yeah, over by the track, right? Have you tried it? It's now a product. Let's see. Called the G Trainer. The inventor, who is Rob Whalen, his son was a graduate student, I think undergraduate student here in mechanical engineering. When he got out of school, he and his buddies started this company to develop the pressure system for use. They mostly have been selling them to, they started selling them to athletic teams all over the world, and now they're selling well to rehab centers and hospitals. But if you, I should explain how it works. If you pressurize, if you put your lower body into a bag that surrounds your body and the treadmill, essentially your whole body's in a balloon, and it's sealed around your waist with a flexible seal, like a kayak neoprene skirt, inflate it to the pressure that you could develop from your own lungs, you can fully levitate. So if you put partial, like a cork in a bottle, essentially, in a carbonated bottle.
What pressure is that?
It's... the ranges, I think, now from like 25 millimeters to mercury to probably 75 millimeters of mercury, or 1 or 2 psi fully levitate you. And you can essentially do the math. If you can figure out the area of your waist, the area of your cross-section of your, yeah, thanks, Dave. I think mine's on the order of 75 square inches. You take the ellipse and do the math. At 2 psi, that's be 150 pounds of lifting force, which you also get a lifting force from the flexible skirt. So this is definitely, it also has wedging. It's a wedging machine, too, a little bit, because it pulls up here. Any other questions about this? Shall we, instead of going into anything that I might have, be honest, you could look at the slides in the online. Let's look at a video. Okay. Thank you. So, Dave, are you talking about this in the class?
I showed the
spot. Already.
The slide where you had a list of,
Okay. So, I like to just kind of record things that have been helpful to me as I go through design projects. And I could attribute a lot of the suggestions to Jim Anderson, who's a machinist that I'd pointed out earlier, worked with us at the VA for years. Basically, it's very important to not be off working by yourself, especially if you're trying to... meet someone's needs, an individual or a group of people. You want to be with them, show them what you're working on, get feedback, and listen to it carefully. The use of the tools, I use SolidWorks daily. I do most of my work with SolidWorks, and I'm finding that the technology is changing. I use different things almost every day. The people that I work with are all over the United States. I see them maybe every 3 years, 3 or 4 years. We do everything by internet. When I was a student, of course, there was no internet, or there was an internet, it was just getting started. We used paper and pencil, but the the tools have changed, and they're constantly changing, and it's just very important to keep up with it as best you can. Some of the others are very obvious. Don't bite off too much. I typically do that. One of the things that I would hear regularly was I get onto a big project, and it would go on for months. And Maury knows that. Maury remembers it. And I would go to Jim, and I'd say, Jim, I can't take any more. Everybody else is dropping like flies. Then no one wants to have anything more to do with this. It's just been going on too long. It's too difficult. And he says, Mount Everest is climbed one step at a time, just one step. And it was even these little simple sayings are very helpful for me in this process. So I think let's get on with the video. Oh, don't need that anymore. These are like little trailers of the projects that.
There's me on a hand bike.
Wasn't that the same day?
The same day, yeah.
Yeah, with Leslie Stahl.
Your dad.
So this is the first time I've ridden it, so I have the side wheels down, but after you get proficient, they can be retracted and you can be riding on two wheels.
You, if you lean to one side, you steer the same direction. It's a little more difficult because you're in a different position if you haven't been on the incumbent. And the cranks feel like you have loose handlebars, so you have to get used to that.
Why do you throw the cranks in phase
Initially, we had them apart just for what this other gentleman had, the concern of being able to catch yourself. But as you crank, you put a force this way and a force this way, it turns the steering. We put the cranks together to keep the steering forces same direction and not affect the steering. This is a little bit long, but it shows a glimpse of this bikini assist, which I have photos of me strapped. It's not very common.
We have two types of students, the doctor and physical therapy students. Doctor of physical therapy students, so the front will have to supply important data.
This is it.
That's another project.
Do you want to talk about that? Or?
Yeah. This is it's just glimpses of this tilting cycle ergometer, which was, that was the project that I was, that took so long.
It's a cycle ergometer for people who've had a stroke. And they get tilted up.
The backrest is on a slide, so they get more and more force put on their feet, and they have to, with their partially paralyzed leg, they have to turn the muscles on in order to keep their position on the slide at the same height. And it carries over to walking.
Right. And it was all instrumented and motorized as well, right?
Yeah, it had all kinds of force sensors for the cranking, for the pedals. Six-axis force sensors. This is the several hundred-pound device. She's testing her VO2 max, or no, her what do you call that? Her,
can't think of it. Oxygen consumption.
Yeah, oxygen consumption. But normally, they aren't wearing a mask to ride it, and they can. Let's see. Was there another one?
No, I don't think so.
I think that's.
Are there any questions?
That, about a year. This is just a prototype, and I think it went on for a year. And Maury was my boss at the time. And he took a photo of me the day that it got shipped out, because it went to Chicago, to these people in Chicago. And I was just so happy. Took a picture of me sitting in the box of this thing going out the door. But you just have to hang in there, and it works out. Thanks for being so patient, and I'm sorry that I didn't come off. Please feel free to call me if you have any questions, or if I might be helpful on projects, I'm happy to talk with you about it.
Doug, I want to thank you so much for coming. It's always good to have you here and show what a Stanford grad can do. Okay, I just want to cover a few things, and then maybe we'll have a little break and before our second lecture comes on. So any questions or comments about the stuff you heard so far? Okay. Yes? Oh, okay, the machine, the Alter G machine, enables a person to walk or exercise without bearing their whole weight. So this would be useful for somebody who had hip surgery or is a paraplegic and learning to walk or recovering from a stroke, something like that. So a lot of times, the other way of doing it is to put yourself in a harness and hang yourself from a harness. But this provides buoyancy, like water provides buoyancy, but it provides air buoyancy. And the other thing is that if you have a rigid membrane on the outside and you pull some air out of it, you're sucked down. So if you have a scale there, you actually weigh more than you would. And so this would be a way of doing exercise training for athletes. So it can work both ways. But the flexible one, you can only pump up, obviously. So a couple items. I have to apologize for a couple of lectures running over time. Sometimes it's unavoidable. Sometimes it's just too interesting. But I encourage people, if you need to go someplace, you know, please go when you have to. It doesn't bother me that you're leaving. I understand that people have things to do. So I don't think anybody would mind if you left, when you had to. And I understand if you're a little bit late as well because of the amount of distance you have to travel. You know, as I said, your thoughts are always welcome because I want to really promote critical thinking in the class. So it's more than just, you know, hearing about stuff. I want you to sort of analyze it and think about it and respond to what you see. And if you're uncomfortable doing it in class, you're certainly welcome to send me email, which several people have done. And I'll be certainly willing to sit down and talk with you about things. I've done that before, too, and it's very helpful. I sent out an email about to students about team projects. I think we got all the teams pretty much formed. Some teams have picked their project. Other teams have to make a final decision. I'd like to have everybody do that by the end of the week and report to me, you know, what you've chosen. For people working on individual projects, please decide on, you know, what you want to work on and let me know because, you know, time is going past and you need to step up to getting your project done. Well, you know, yesterday was Martin Luther King's birthday, and we all were expected to reflect on, you know, what he meant and, you know, about his teachings. And so I did a little bit of that. And you know, his one quote, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." And so, you know, I try to figure out, what does this mean for people with disabilities? And, of course, Dr. Martin Luther King was talking about discrimination, you know, back in the 60s. And he was hoping that his kids and other people would, you know, not have to deal with the discrimination and segregation that he was. And so this phrase, content of their character, really describes what he thought was important. And so we can probably use this as a way of describing people with disabilities as well. It's not their disability, it's what their character is. So we can substitute, you know, any, it can, you know, not just the color of the skin, but,
we want to judge a person by their abilities, not by their disabilities. So that's what I got out of Martin Luther King. And just one little small thing, you know, we all watching the news about Congressman Giffords, and so, you know, I'm looking at it, and apparently she's doing really well, which is surprising, you know, because the bullet went through into her skull and into her brain and back out, which is just, you know, it's amazing that she even survived. And she's now breathing on her own, moving her arm on her own. It's unclear if she can talk or walk, but they'll tell us, right? And so the question I had is, you know, how much will she recover? Will she be able to continue to serve in Congress? And what kind of assistive technology could she use to continue serving? So these are some of the things that I'm thinking of when I see those news articles. So on Thursday, we're going to have a student panel, four students, including Nicole. We'll talk about their perspectives of being students with a disability. And so be ready to ask them questions. They're going to be talking about themselves, and we'll have an opportunity to question them about their lives, successes, and challenges and stuff. So that'll be on for Thursday. I think we'll take about a five-minute break and give Maurice a chance to get started here, give us a chance to have a bathroom break or just stretch. And Maurice will talk about a prosthetic hand. So see you in 5 minutes. Yeah, just a second.